morning. Just after 8 o'clock, and you are listening to Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights. I'm Brian Feldman, and this is Out of Line. We are here every Sunday, live in the Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio in Las Vegas. The we includes co-host Caleb Herring, the last UNLV quarterback to lead the Rebels to a bowl game, and he is the radio color voice for Rebels football and the co-host of the Tony Sanchez Show Wednesday nights throughout the season on our sister station, The Leader. Also here, producer Chris Magnum Chapman, who among several other responsibilities, moonlights as the locker room radio reporter for Vegas Golden Knights radio game broadcasts. And today we welcome the newest member of the team, Spencer Ostrowski. Let's just call him Oz. I guess that's what he goes by. Like the wizard?
I was going to say the Wiz. The Wiz. Just to be culturally.
Well, you can. I remember the Wiz, yeah.
Yeah, the Wiz.
WPIX in New York used to show it every single year, yeah, the Wiz. Yeah. Michael Jackson, before he.
Yep.
Well, before he.
Diana Ross.
Turned into a freak, yeah.
Diana Ross, yeah. The Wiz.
It was great.
Well, you know, we got it. We usually got the producer gets, or should say the executive producer gets a bunch of nicknames, so. We can go with Oz, the Wiz. It'll change every week.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
So go ahead. You can pull a microphone up. What's up, Spencer?
I would say some people take it in the form of Ozzy Osbourne as well. So everyone kind of interprets it the way.
But you have to buy
the looks
Batman.
A little like Ozzy's kid, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Was it Jack Osbourne?
Jack Osbourne. Yeah. He could be Jack Osbourne.
You know, I don't bite the head off a bat first before we go.
Yeah, and I don't know if Ozzy gets street cred or he loses street cred for doing a song with Post Malone.
Oof. I'm sorry, but I happen to like Post Malone, so I have my reasons for that, and I won't talk about him on the radio. Listen.
Is it because he's maybe one of the ugliest people on the planet, and yet somehow
he's got some good rhythm, and he sings well.
Doesn't he own, like, a weed shop?
Oh.
Would that surprise you?
It wouldn't surprise me that that's the reason that you were a fan.
Oh, my Lord in heaven.
Listen,
here
it's legal here. I
don't know what he's talking about.
It's Utah. Anyways, where you're doing the show.
Spencer did debut last week. He was the guest of Damian Gravato, who won an appearance on the show by winning the Buffalo Wild Wings Blazin' Wing Challenge. And now a week later, again, Spencer's going to be a fixture on the show. And, again, affectionately known to us as the intern, Oz, the Wiz, whatever we want to call him, man. I mean, it's hazing time. Listen, the show is also streaming on the LV Sports Network, and you can watch the show on Facebook Live. The page is called Out of Line, and that is Outline. I forgot how to spell this morning. The show is
spending too much time hanging with Post Malone, huh?
I guess I am. You see what Caleb's got started this morning? You know, I'm not hanging out with Post Malone. You know who I hang out with at dispensaries?
Bobby. I knew you were going to do it.
Wow, man.
I had to beat you too because I knew it was coming. But
I can't even lie and say that's not where I was going. He completely cut me off on the road. listen, the show is also, since we are live, the phone lines are open in the Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio line, 702-876-1340. Give us a call.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
And What's on Tap comes your way thanks to the title sponsor, the Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice when looking for answers about home financing. Check out cardinalfinancial.com on tap. UNLV wins at Vanderbilt. And no, you are not hearing something that isn't true. They actually beat an SEC team on the road. The Vegas Golden Knights snap a two-game losing streak and might have the best fourth line in the National Hockey League, or at least last night they did. Pretty incredible. We'll talk about that. We've got Blazin and S&B with C, our NFL picks of the week. And if you want a good tip, our very own Caleb Herring is perfect when it comes to who not to bet on. Stick around, and he'll tell you who you should bet on. Maybe not. Don't forget, if you are looking to buy or refinance, the Cardinal Financial Company should be your first choice. Check out cardinalfinancial.com today. That's What's on Tap. And Mags, let's hit fact this.
Magyar now takes the handoff. Magyar's on his feet at the 5. Touchdown! Wow! Chad Magyar broke 2-3 tackles, and he goes in from 14 yards. And the Rebels lead 33-10 at Vanderbilt with a point after coming up.
Fact this. Fact this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Yeah, it's a fact. Out-of-line producer Chris Magnum Chapman predicted that UNLV would beat Vanderbilt. That was before the season started. I'll bet Caleb, if he would have picked last week, he wouldn't have said the same thing. But I'm giving him credit where credit is due. This means either that UNLV has turned a corner and we are going to see a better brand of football going forward this season, or that Vanderbilt might not be the worst team in the SEC. They might be one of the worst teams in the country. Magnum, since you predicted the win 2 months ago, you go first.
Well, I don't think they've turned the corner. To me, you turn the corner when you consistently win games that either you're supposed to win or against teams that you shouldn't beat. To me, I need to see more than one good game to prove to me that they've turned the corner. However, I will say this. I know the score last week against Boise was a little lopsided. I thought defensively they played well in that game. And obviously yesterday they played well defensively. To give up only 10 points to an SEC team, I don't care who it is, to go on the road to an SEC school and shut them down the way UNLV did, it's impressive. And, you know, I know a lot of people were looking to rain on the parade of Coach Sanchez. Twitter could be such a nasty thing. Because, you know, you could be a tough guy on Twitter,
yeah,
but you won't be a tough guy in person. Well, give the guy a lot of credit. He could have packed it in. Look, we got blown out last week against Boise. We lost to Arkansas State where we got rolled. I don't have my starting quarterback. But I think what the UNLV team showed yesterday was heart. And I think that's something that's been missing, not only from the UNLV football team, but from a lot of the sports on campus the last couple of years, heart. And Coach Sanchez, he didn't pack it in.
Nope.
Those kids certainly didn't pack it in. And even if it's for one day, one weekend, give the program credit. Applaud Coach Sanchez for going on the road and winning in an environment. I don't care if it's Vanderbilt, it's an SEC school. 90% of this UNLV team would not start on that team. They probably wouldn't have even have been recruited by an SEC school. So give the program some credit. Give them their just due. And you know what? If they lose next week at Fresno, go right ahead and start bailing on them again.
Yeah.
But for one weekend, give this team what they deserve, and that's your applause and credit.
I'm not going to disagree with that. And, Caleb, I'm going to talk to you about this because UNLV's only won one SEC game in their history, and that was in the 2000 Las Vegas Bowl. And it's a team that ironically beat them this year that's not an SEC team anymore, Arkansas State. But it was impressive. And one of the things, Caleb, that I thought stood out, and he has really flashed some potential, and I'm not talking about NFL potential, but I'm talking about potential at the collegiate level, and that's Javen White. You know, I think maybe he felt a little bit dissed at the beginning of the season only because it was Gabe McCoy. He was the guy, the picture of their defense, and they brought in Vic, and they brought in some other players, and Jericho Flowers is the star of the secondary, and you didn't hear his name mentioned enough. And I thought, you know, he might be the best athlete on this defense, and he shows it time and time again. Another huge pick late in the game that really cemented the win for UNLV, and along with another guy, Chad Magyar, man, we never even heard of this kid before the season, and he is a tough, hard-nosed, bruising running back.
Yeah, well, Javen is probably the leader on the defense, regardless of who the media was talking about. And I think he got some preseason nods for being the best linebacker in the country. So, I mean, that was – or being in the running for that award. So, he knows and understands
his
role.
The
Butkus Award. He understands his role to the team and what he's capable of. I think the problem with him is, if you're talking about playing on the next level, is that he's a tweener. He's in between being a real linebacker and a defensive
back.
You
know, I was going to say, if you look back in history – Jack Lambert and Javen White are about the same exact size, but unfortunately, Jack Lambert played middle linebacker in the 70s.
Yeah,
where being 215 pounds was acceptable.
These
now,
days,
if you're 6'4", 215, you might be able to play quarterback.
So it's a different thing when you get to the next level. He'd have to do a drastic full-body makeover to be able to be a linebacker or a defensive back. So that's... He probably could make a roster as a specialist if he, you know, there's people that make practice squads and are on special teams.
You know, with his height, Caleb, if he could put on a little bulk, could he be a free safety or a strong safety in the NFL?
I could see it like a Cam Chancellor type.
Yeah, exactly.
I think his cover skills are good enough where he's put enough on film as far as coverage to be able to make it at the next level, I think.
He'll get a look.
He should, yeah. And he deserves one. With the season he's had and the career he's put together, he's made not only some big interceptions, but he's made some huge tackles as well, like some solo tackles in open field, the fourth down stop in open field by himself last week. So he's a good player. And then Chad Maguire, I didn't really hear much about him because – they were worried about if he's going to be able to play or not. And so you missed him the first four games of the season. His first game was last week. And he's someone that the Rebels have been excited about as that number two on the depth chart. They've been struggling to find depth behind Charles Williams, who's the obvious number one running back. He's an explosive player, but he can't play every snap. He can't get the ball 30 times a game and expect to make it to the end of the season. So having Maguire back there gives them another running back that they trust with the entire catalog of the playbook. And he's like capable and even more capable out of the backfield as a receiver than Charles Williams is. So there's some things there that he presents that are a luxury for the offense. And I think the biggest thing that he provided was the ability to be who they want to be offensively. And I think Coach Sanchez mentioned it last week, and it was the first time that he really took a hard, serious look at it. And some serious changes were made. Like Coach Justice was calling the plays from the booth for an entire game for the first time. He usually calls them from the sideline. Also, the running game. They say balance. There was balance there, but it wasn't balance. It was run heavy. They ran the ball 50-plus times and threw the ball in the teens. So, and that's for UNLV, that's balance. That's what they want to do. They were effective in the pass game, but they don't want to be a pass-first team. They don't want to throw the ball 40, 50 times a game. That's not their style. And Maguire being in the backfield, giving that depth at running back, allows them to be able to run the ball that many times and establish himself. And like you said, it's an SEC team. I don't care if they're the bottom of the SEC run, they still have size, physicality.
And it was in their house.
It's in their home. And I will say this, their crowd is probably just as fed up with them at this point as some Rebel fans have been at UNLV. They're both 1-4 teams. And in the SEC, a football program, 1-4 feels terrible.
And Caleb, some Rebel fans, any fan that is a true football fan is disgusted and done. It's not some. It's real fans. Like, well, okay, I so, mean, and no, it's not that I, you're no, done. No, you're just, so, okay, so you're hurt.
Football fan.
You're hurt.
There's a difference between being you know, a fan, and this is kind of, if I had a beef, it would be this. I don't have beef with people. I'm above that. But, no, if I had to have a beef, I would say your fandom should not be affected by your team's wins or losses.
I would agree with that. I'm not going to disagree.
If you're a fan, you have to be a fanatic when they're down, too. You have to be able to
support. You can be repulsed, but you should still be there.
I wouldn't say repulsed. I would say you can be critical. Like, Detroit Lions fans are different. They should be repulsed.
Well, yeah, that word like, is
it's just been
is,
too
a
long. It's been ridiculous, you know? Like, but so they've been just abused. But if you're a fan of a team that's having a down season or has lost a few games, it shouldn't be, you know, right to fire the coach or right to I boo them or all that kind of stuff. And it kind of makes me sick because, especially at the college level, because these kids aren't being paid. They're trying to make it, too. They have hopes and dreams of what college football was going
to
be like.
They're carrying out what their coaches are telling them to do.
Yeah, booing the kids is something that
terrible.
I would never be terrible on board with. And this is for all fan bases that partake in such things, such shenanigans, I'll call them, that it's just not appropriate at this level to if you're going to call yourself a fan.
I booed. You know, the only person I've ever booed is Michigan State had a punter once named Chris Solani, and I booed when he punted. He would punt
the punter?
Dude, he would punt 10 yards. I mean, constantly. He would kick off the side of his foot. And I thought, this is a school with like 40,000 students. There has got to be somebody here that can kick a football farther than 10 yards.
Oh,
and so
goodness.
I wasn't necessarily booing him. I was booing everything. Like, that was our
everything
weakness.
Associated with
him. The weakness of our special teams when it came to punting at one time at Michigan State was god awful. Again, when you've got a Big Ten school, there has got to be somebody on campus that can punt a football.
Yeah,
wouldn't you think?
I could probably do it better.
Seriously,
the Rebel game. This was a good win, and I think in terms of turning a corner, there's a lot of corners that need to be turned. Obviously, with the Rebel program, and this is the first time that I can remember in the past 5-6 years, maybe even longer than that, that both sides of the ball have been playing well at the same time, where it was the defense pitching a shutout in the second half, mm-hmm. which is impressive against anybody. I don't care what you say. That's impressive. And then the offense putting up points, 30-plus points in a game on the same night and doing it well. Like, I mean, it was the offense from the start moved the ball, kept the defense off the field. The one and two deep for the defense didn't really get deep on the depth chart. It was just a complete game on both sides of the ball. Special teams still a little bit scary. There were some moments where I thought Vanderbilt was going to shift the momentum with a big return, and they almost broke it. But other than that, it was a complete performance. And I think that's a corner that hasn't been turned before, where, especially under Coach Sanchez, for the first 4 years, it was always the offense was carrying the defense.
Well,
and
to see them play well in the second half,
yeah,
and make some adjustments to keep the game in hand.
And then not make adjustments as well. Like, offensively, they didn't change the game plan. They didn't come out throwing the ball 20-plus times in the second half. They stuck with it.
And throwing the ball, speaking of that, I thought, at least I didn't see the game, I listened to you guys and listened to the broadcast, it really sounded like we saw a huge maturity leap from Kenyon Oblad from last week to this week. Is that a fair assessment, or is it the weakness of Vanderbilt again, and also the mix of the running game that helped make him look
better?
Yeah,
it was the mix. It was not relying on him solely to carry the day with his arm or anything like that. Not relying on him to throw
accurate.
20. And it was because he was more efficient. Like the play calling, I should say, was more efficient and effective because they relied on the run still. So his opportunities to pass were fewer. But when they did decide to, it was open. And it was in good situations for him where he didn't have to throw 3rd and 15 or anything like that. They took a shot play. The one shot play they took, he hit on it. And that was Sarando Grimes on the deep post. And that was it. So it was a big play, but it wasn't like they were chasing that big play the whole time. They took advantage of an opportunity, and he, with his accuracy and his ability as a passer, was able to convert it, which is big. That's huge, understanding that moment. There was also a 4th and 6 that was huge down the stretch to ice the game. They were leading by 2 touchdowns, I think, at the time. And instead of kicking the field goal or putting it away, they went for it on 4th and 6 to try to milk some more time off. Relying on Oblad and understanding his accuracy and his ability as a passer and how he can affect the game with his opportunities, that one was one. That was a huge completion, again, to Grimes to convert that 4th down. So it's not about taking over a game as a passer. It's not about making everything about you.
It's about managing the game
and taking advantage of the spots when the team needs you to. And that's what I think the struggle with Armani was this team could have looked exactly the same with him, just he's not as accurate a passer and as efficient in the passing, because there's moments like this or that 4th down conversion or that shot play where you come up just short or you barely miss it, and those little details are what make the difference in winning and losing ball games. And that's what happened here. I don't think Kenyon did anything special. He did his job, and that, to me, he was efficient,
he managed the game, and they got a win. And that's what you're looking for.
And that's what you want from your quarterback. You don't want somebody to take over. You just want to be efficient.
Because I don't want to make it the UNLV post-game show.
It should be.
And well, we gave them a lot of time because they earned it today. Hey, you're wearing the hat. I'm wearing a UNLV shirt. I mean, we're representing and we're giving them credit. But 2 questions for you, and we'll move on because we definitely want to talk about another local team that had a big win last night. But the 2 questions are, number one, is Kenyon Oblad the better option for UNLV? And number two, going forward, they now go on the road to Fresno, and they come home to a San Diego State team at the beginning of the season we thought was going to be a downgrade, and yet San Diego State looks like a formidable foe, and these are 2 big games coming up back-to-back for UNLV. What do you think going forward? And again, is Oblad the best option?
I think he has done enough to prove that he is. Especially absent a healthy Armani. If Armani's not 100%, there's no need to put him back.
If he is?
Right now, I don't know.
Hair of the dog, brother. And right now, Oblad bit him, and you got to go with the hair of the dog.
Yeah, I think it's true. But I think there's still a major part of the offense that's missing. And I think the quarterback run is going to have to become a bigger part of Oblad's repertoire. He doesn't have to run like Armani, but I think he's going to have to. And I mentioned it a few times. Yeah, show that he can, because out of that zone read scheme offense, the quarterback has to be a threat. And I think he just has to do it a little bit, not much. Maybe 3 or 4 times a game where he keeps it and rips off 6 or 7 yards. He did it a couple times in last week's game, which was good, kept the defense honest. But I think I'd be a fool to say that he wasn't the guy right now, and I think he should be. And it's not that I don't think Armani gives you a chance to win. It's that I think he's hot right now and he's feeling good. And at this point, I don't know where Armani's confidence is as far as being on the sideline and watching another guy lead the team to a win in the SEC territory. And I think the team is galvanizing behind Kenyon, and as they should. So I think for the foreseeable future, it should be Kenyon's show.
Okay, what about next week? What goes on at Fresno State? They definitely played hard. Do you have a letdown after a big emotional victory on the road? You stay on the road. You go to Fresno State. Maybe being on the road alleviates a little bit of pressure from these guys. Well, and you would know.
Yeah.
But can they beat, realistically, can they beat Fresno State?
I don't see why anybody would think they couldn't. And I don't think why, just because they were losing games before doesn't mean that each week they don't have a chance to beat the opponent. Okay. Like, I think UNLV at their best is better than a lot of teams left on the schedule. I think Colorado State, Reno, San Jose, there's still a lot of games that I would, if I was just looking at both teams objectively and not, like, taking into account the previous games and the schedule and their record going into the game, I would say that UNLV has a chance in most of their games, especially since Fresno State just got blitzed by Air Force. And I mean, Air Force is a solid team, but it's not like Fresno's some world beater anymore where they're just dominating the Mountain West Conference. They can be a solid team, but I think UNLV has a chance to win. And it helps that they're coming off a big win on a short week because you just turn around and get right back to football again. Shorter week of practice, not as much grind going on. Leave on Thursday to get up to Fresno and get the game rolling. So I think UNLV definitely has a chance to win it, and there's a lot of wins left on the schedule if this UNLV team that we saw against Vanderbilt shows up to play for the rest of the season.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Puck is back to center. Cody Glass leads his man up the right wing. It's Nosek setting up Carrier, shooting, and a save. Rebound, score! Nosek forced it through. Riddick thought he had secured it. He had not. And Vegas strikes first in Game 5. 1-0 Knights. Penalty time is over. 5-on-5 hockey now with a centering pass. Score! On the backhand. It's Will Carrier. 2 points on the night. Carlson sets up Carrier. Knights in the lead, 3-2. Knights send it in. Look out. Two Flames collide inside the line. It's Reeves working right. He shoots. Score! He beats David Riddick for a 5-2 Golden Knights lead. First goal of the season for number 75, Ryan Reeves.
William Carey, how big was it to get this win and stop the losing streak? I mean, I know it's early in the season, but still, you know, two wins against the Sharks, then two tough losses. How big was this game?
Yeah, especially your last game here against Boston was a tough one. You don't want to let the fan down, you know, two losses at home. So everyone showed up tonight. It was good for us.
Talk about this fourth line. I know you were just talking about how important it is for you guys to be one of the top fourth lines in the league. You guys really play well together. Is it the chemistry now with you and Ryan and Tomas playing together now for a couple of years? The chemistry's really starting to gel?
Yeah, I mean, we know where we are. Execution's got to be there. If that is there, like tonight was, I mean, we're good. We're good players. Last game especially, our execution wasn't there for our team, so tonight was just, you know, we're making those plays, the little plays, the little chip, the going to the nets, everything was doing well. The little details was good for us, man.
How much is it fired up to have your last line of defense be number 29 to play all these couple of years with this guy? And again tonight, keeping you in the game because he made some really key saves early on to give you guys a chance to win the game after they came back and tied it.
Yeah, I mean, I said it before, I think he's the best goal in the league. And he shows up every night, so it gives us a chance to win. He's, he's always got the smile on. He's always cheering for the boys, working hard. So, we kind of feed off of that, and it's nice to have him.
You know, you guys are known as a physical line, obviously, and that's kind of your job. But you don't just play physical. You put the puck in the net, too. How much do you relish that role of having the physical part of the game, but also, you know, being offensive as well?
It's one of our tools we use. I mean, we're all big guys. We separate the puck from the guy. We don't just go out there and try to kill anyone. We actually hit the for a purpose and to get the puck. And tonight we had a really good forecheck. The last one where Evo Barry, I was in there trying to get the puck. So that's all we're trying to do. We're not trying to, bury anyone out there. We're trying to play smart and get the puck back.
William, you've seen this team now for 3 years. Where is this team compared to the teams of the last two seasons at this point in the season this year?
I mean, we got a contender team, I think. Like we keep saying it, if we show up every night, we got a chance to win. I mean, we're not putting a lot of pressure on ourselves. We just want to play, hard every night, good work ethic, little details, and the skills are going to pop up after.
Last question. You talked earlier about the fans and how important it was to come back here and get a win. Every game, it seems like it's a postseason game, even in the preseason. How cool is that as a player to experience something like that when it's almost a postseason environment every game and even in the preseason?
Yeah, we feed off of that. I know personally I do. When I get out there, it's nighttime. It's an incredible feeling. That's one of the first years we're flying out there, and we get score a chance every time. So, thanks for the fans.
Appreciate it. Thank you. No problem. Chris, I'll tell you, William Carrier is a lot of fun to watch. To see a guy with his physicality, when you see him, the guy is built like a brick you-know-what house. And and he, he plays with that physical approach. Maybe not hitting as many people as Ryan Reeves does, but yet he brings the physicality and almost Bob Probert-esque, bringing back an old Detroit Red Wing that was a 30-30 guy. That's the kind of guy that William Carrier could be.
Well, if William Carrier can get his hands to catch up with the rest of his game, he's got the potential to be a really, really good player.
Yeah.
Because he's fast. Like you said, he is very physical. He can create separation from the puck in the defensive end when he needs to. He can create turnovers. It's a matter of him getting it together when he gets in front of the net. And we've seen he's got the capability to do it. He's already scored two goals this year.
Did it last night.
And last night, he was able to get the rebound in. And, that line played really well last night. And I went into the game not expecting much from that line. But, they got three goals. Two guys making stars in the night, both Nosek and Carrier.
They got three goals.
Yeah, well, three goals. Each guy in the line
every
scored.
Every guy scored. Nosek had 2 points, and so did Carrier. They were both stars of the game.
And Reeves had his first goal, and it was a really bizarre play when Reeves scored, because you had two guys, Milan Lucic and I believe it was Rasmus Anderson from Calgary, who collided, and smart heads-up play by Reeves. He was able to corral the puck, and he skated right in.
He shot it from a tough body position.
Yeah, because he was literally right in front of Rittich.
Yes.
And so it was a matter of him needing to get it in the right spot, and he did. And, credit to him for the heads-up play and getting in front of the net and putting the puck behind Rittich. And, it wasn't an important goal, but every goal is important, I believe. And, Ryan Reeves.
Well, I think to the fourth line played, it was tremendously important.
Because they didn't play a lot in the first period.
Yeah.
There were a couple penalties, and none of those guys really. Well, Nosek plays in the PK, but Reeves and Carrier don't. Neither one of them play on the power play. So, for that line to get as many points as they did last night, to play as well as they did against an opponent that is a really good team. Like, you watch Johnny Gaudreau for Calgary, and he's one of the most exciting players in the team.
When the playoffs started last year, Chris, if I would have told you in a crystal ball Calgary's going to win the Stanley Cup, you wouldn't have fallen off your chair. I mean, yeah, they went out in the first round, but they were one of the best teams in hockey closing out the season last year.
I mean, Calgary is a good team. They're going to fight for a playoff spot. They are the defending Pacific Division champs. They have a Norris Trophy winning defenseman in Mark Giordano. They have all-stars. So, I mean, their first line is as good as any first line in the NHL. So, for Vegas to win that game the way they did, I mean, what struck me was they were up 2-1, or they were up 1-0. Calgary, I think, tied it, right? 1-1. Then Calgary took the lead, 2-1.
And it looked like an, oh no, here we go again.
And they scored two goals in 33 seconds. I'm still trying to figure out how the Gaudreau goal went in. But somehow it did, just like the Cody Glass goal did at the end. Two really bizarre goals in that game. But they responded, right? They got down 2-1. All of a sudden, it's 5-2. So, I mean, 6-2 final. So Vegas, they responded the way they needed to. And I think a big part of that was the fourth line and Marc-Andre Fleury.
I was just about to say, the unsung hero of last night's game, although he did give up two goals in the second period, Marc-Andre Fleury, again, made some spectacular saves that kept the Golden Knights in the game and gave them the opportunity to come back and win the game.
Well, the sequence they had.
It can't be understated how many times this guy has bailed them out with some spectacular play, even at his age. And, I'm even starting to say we're expecting the decline of Marc-Andre Fleury, and then he gives me a performance like he did last night, and I'm like, okay, let me sit back and shut up and remember.
He made five saves in a 30-second span at the end of the second period when Calgary was on the power play.
I mean, his team was on their heels.
Yeah. I mean, but Nosek was diving in front of pucks, and guys were, you know, that penalty kill played really well.
They did.
And Marc-Andre Fleury, a huge part of that, and, you know, a lot of guys will tell you their number one, their number one penalty killer is Marc-Andre Fleury, and he showed it last night.
Yeah, tonight they're playing the Kings. They go to L.A. It's their first back-to-back games of the season. And I think it'll be good for them. But last night was just – it was big. The two-game slide, we saw the loss against Boston, which was a tough one, when they came out and they looked so strong in the first period, and then they kind of got lethargic in that game. And I really think it was good to get off. And then to go to Arizona and really got it handed to them by the Coyotes, people started getting a little scared here. I think it was a big win against Calgary, and I look for the same. I think they'll go to L.A. and beat the Kings tonight there. They come home. I think Tuesday night they're back home playing the Predators, and then they've got Ottawa on Thursday, and then they're on the road next weekend. So look forward to the Golden Knights again. This is a playoff team. I think this is the best team they've had in the 3 years they've been here, believe it or not. And this team could really contend for a Stanley Cup this year if they keep it together. Marc-Andre Fleury stays healthy. All these guys continue to play well, and the lines mesh. This team, the sky's the limit. Listen, let's take a break. On the other side of the break, we are going to come back. We've got to do some we got Blazin', we've got S&B with C, and we also got our picks coming up. We'll be right back.
This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why. This is why. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why. This is why. This is why I'm hot. I'm hot cause I'm fly. You ain't cause you not.
It is time for Blazin', brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. Two happy hours every day, America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. And, of course, the home of the greatest Monday Night Football party in town. We're there every Monday night. We'll be there tomorrow night as the Detroit Lions play the Green Bay Packers. And it is a huge NFC North battle. And I'm already ready for disappointment. I've already got it. I'm bringing my crying towel, and I'm rocking and ready and rolling to go because I know what's going to happen. It's I'm wearing the hat. I'm believing. They're 2-1-1 right now. Man, I hate saying that 1-1. It bothers the hell out of me still because I feel that that is going to be the difference between the playoffs and not the playoffs because that is typical Detroit Lions lore. But yeah, I just don't know. Going into Green Bay, playing the Packers and Aaron Rodgers on the road, I don't care whether Devontae Adams is healthy or not. Lions are in for a long night tomorrow. I just got a bad feeling.
Yeah, you'd probably be right. But
I'm not going to pick against them.
You
I'm not
chose
gonna...
this life, though. You
no,
chose...
I didn't chose where I was born. I'm loyal to where I was born. Aren't you? Who's your
no,
team?
No, God, no. Why? Why would anybody do that? That's a
the Lakers.
I wasn't born in L.A., but and that was not.
Were you born in Southern Cal?
Yeah, so okay, I could have been a Clipper fan, and I chose the path of righteousness instead because I'm a Laker fan.
He chose a team that was good.
Yes, yeah. the better team.
I mean, being born into a situation shouldn't mean that you're doomed to stay there.
Who did your dad root for? Your dad a Clipper fan or a Laker fan?
A Laker fan, of course. All right. Well, but he's also an L.A. an original L.A. Rams fan, so I don't celebrate or root for the
Rams.
Well,
the Rams
so.
Weren't there when
who's
you were growing
football?
Up.
And so, who's your football team then?
If I had to pick, I've said this before, and people knock me, but I don't have an official dedicated fan football team. So, but I find myself watching the Packers more than anything because I have a favorite player, and it's Aaron Rodgers.
I would have never had him sitting here, and he said that right off the day one. The Green Bay Packers.
Well, no, I mean,
he's a cheesehead?
He gets a pass on the Lakers stuff, but yeah. Packers? Come on, man.
Really? Like I said, I wouldn't say I'm a Packer fan. I'm an Aaron Rodgers fan.
I'm going to get him one of those cheeseheads, and he's got to wear it on the show.
Geez. I'd wear it. There's no doubt I'd wear it.
Oh, my Lord.
I'm not opposed to it. I'm not a Lions fan, so I wouldn't be like, I wouldn't break out in hives.
This lunatic shows up in his Eric Kramer jersey sometimes, and his Herman Moore jersey.
You got one of those?
Do you have a Herman Moore jersey?
This is a part of the socioeconomic problem of the United States. Where you're born doesn't dictate what you become.
I'm not going to deny that, but I was brought up a Lions fan. I was watching Lions games before I knew what was going on.
Poor kid.
And so I know, it was terrible. I actually saw a guy die on the football field at Tiger Stadium, and I should have known that was a sign that this is going to be cursed forever. His name was Chuck Hughes. True story. He was a wide receiver. He caught a pass, stood up, walked over to the sidelines, and dropped dead right there on the field. He had a hole in his heart. And everyone's like, what happened? And I was at the game. I don't remember it, but my dad says I was at the game with him. So I was at the game.
Maybe it's you. I mean, you're the curse of the Detroit Lions.
You know
maybe
what?
When you stop,
Chuck Hughes would still be around today if you hadn't gone to that game.
Yeah. You know what, Max? Though, because he said that, sad. You know what I'm doing now? I'm going to become an LA Lakers fan.
Leave us alone. Stay out of it.
I'm going to go out and become a. I'm going to wear my Wilt Chamberlain jersey next week. As a matter of fact, I have a Wilt Chamberlain. Listen, it is blazing, and I wanted to tell you, this guy. I mean, how can you not choose Labor Torres as blazing? This kid for the New York Yankees. He'll be 23 in December. Okay, he is the youngest American League player of all time with 5 RBIs in a postseason game. Including an HR last night off of Greinke. And check this out. Torres has an 8-game postseason hitting streak going right now, dating back to last year. And he has an RBI in all 4 games this season. This guy is absolutely off the chart. He is putting up numbers. They're comparing him to guys like Mantle and DiMaggio. And he's a second baseman right now with all kinds of power to every field. I'm not going to say he's an anomaly, but after the game, Mags, I heard him. You got that bite? Yeah, after the game, this is him talking about, you know, when he's compared, you know, people are comparing him to DiMaggio and to Mickey Mantle. This is what he has to say about it.
I believe in what I can do. I feel super good when I do my job and help my team in every situation. The most important for me is to stay humble every time. I stay humble, respect the game, and be fun. I mean, that is a game I enjoy. I play really well, and I enjoy every time.
22 years old. Sounds a lot more mature than that. 5 RBIs last night. New York wins game 1 in Houston, 7-0. A huge game for New York. And Tanaka, man, I'll tell you what, the guy during the regular season is okay. But it is amazing how efficient he gets in the postseason. His ERA is just over 1.5 in the postseason, and he's not even close to that in the regular season. But, man, he goes on the road as cool as a cucumber and gets it done for the Yankees. Pretty incredible. And you want to know what's blazing overall, Caleb, Mags? Just the home run ball this year in Major League Baseball, 6,776 home runs in 2019. That is an all-time record, and it beat the closest home run record, this is what's crazy, by 670 home runs. 15 teams set club records for home runs. The Yankees, of all things, set a team record. 306, and that didn't even lead the majors. The Twins led them with 307 home runs. An incredible year for the long ball and viewing postseason, and you're going to see it continue, man. The Yankees and Houston should be a great series. I don't think last night's game is indicative of what we'll see, as Houston's got some of the best starting pitching all around. And so does the Washington Nationals. And it makes me sick when I look around the postseason. You talk about Detroit, Caleb, being a Detroit fan. I've got Max Scherzer and Anibal Sanchez pitching for the Washington Nationals, both former Tigers. And I've got Justin Verlander pitching for the Astros. If those three guys were the starting three guys for the Tigers, maybe they wouldn't have lost over 100 games this year.
That's probably true. And I mean, you kind of peeked into my blazing there a little bit, but it's okay. I was going to go, there was a couple of choices. I was going to go Simone Biles because I love her, and she's a phenomenal athlete. She's a GOAT. She's now the most decorated gymnast of all time.
Not the GOAT.
Medals.
She's the GOAT.
The GOAT. The real.
Yeah, she doesn't have videotape of other teams.
Yeah, she doesn't record other gymnast practices.
At least that we know of.
Yeah, so she, that's cool. Then also I want to go South Carolina, a little college football love, along with the Rebels upsetting Vanderbilt. South Carolina upset Georgia in Georgia.
Huge.
Which is huge. That's a big time win for them. So that was a runner up to Blazin, but I was going to go Anibal Sanchez for having that no hitter through 8. I mean, just because it's in October and pitching is always more important in the postseason.
And he's the guy on Washington that's not talked about.
And exactly,
it's amazing.
He's underappreciated, I think. Yep. And kind of took advantage
of
his
pitchers on that
team. And then also with the gravity of the moment, Daniel Hudson, who was scheduled to be relieving during that game, was on an absence maternity leave to watch his daughter be born, which, I mean, family first, I get it, and that's huge of him to be able to do that, but then it put a lot more pressure on Sanchez to actually perform, and so pitching a no-hitter through 8 was big in that game, so I think he was blazing for that. And in October, pitching is huge.
Don't get me started.
As a Dodger fan, I understand how huge.
I'm a parent, and I'll tell you.
Why did I bring that up?
I'm a parent, and I'll tell you right now. Back to Daniel Murphy's days when he missed opening day, and I'm sorry, you're paid millions of dollars. Childbirth is like this these days. You're not having tragedies like you did in the past. I think your kid would appreciate the fact that you pitched in the playoffs that day as opposed to been at his birth. But
no, I'm on the other side.
I'm sorry, not so much for the kid.
Not so much for the kid, because it all depends on your wife.
It's
or
not
your,
about
your,
the kid.
My wife would have said,
"You and the experience."
Child. My yeah. wife would have said, "Go do your job."
No, okay. So if your wife, if your wife says that,
that's why you're divorced.
If your wife says that, that's okay. You're winning as an individual. That's fine. Good for you. But if your wife wants you to be there and it means something for you to be there for the birth of your first child, I think you got to be there. There's no doubt in my mind you got to make that move. And I think after you make that move, you appreciate why you made that move.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I mean.
Postseason opening day, I think a regular season
it's
game.
It's not the World Series. It's not the World Series. Yeah. Okay. It's
what if it was the World Series?
Then you have a different discussion.
Okay. You got to talk about it. You got to
hold
on to that baby. All right.
What if it's an NFL playoff game?
Or fly out to where the game's at.
Again, NFL playoff game, you only get one.
Yeah, it's different. This is a story.
All right.
Regular season game, you miss the regular season game. Life goes on.
Opening day is a gigantic day in baseball. I don't think you miss that day. They have 140 more games.
Yeah.
151 more games. But the whole thing 61. Is 161 more games.
Too many.
But I'm not disagreeing with that. But opening day is always sold out. Okay, Mags, what do you got?
I'm going to go with a bizarre off-the-wall one. But right now the Rugby World Cup is going on over in Japan. Japan, for the first time in their history, they are in the quarterfinals of the Rugby World Cup. They knocked out Scotland yesterday.
What?
Which is a huge, huge win for...
That's so cool. I didn't even know Japan had a rugby team.
I was going to say, I didn't know they played rugby there.
Well, yeah, they do. And the Rugby World Cup going on. So a day after a deadly typhoon swept through Japan and an earthquake at the same time. How about that? They get a typhoon and an earthquake.
National news? Jesus.
Well, because we have... Never mind.
I know.
On the other side, the U.S., no points. They get crushed again. They were awful. They crash out. Tonga beat them on the last play. U.S. does not score any wins in the Rugby World Cup. They're done. But Japan, they beat Scotland, moved to the quarterfinals undefeated. They play South Africa. So tough task, because South Africa is, as we remember the movie Invictus with Matt Damon, Morgan Freeman as Nelson Mandela. That was... fantastic film. So now they are in the last eight, and that's who their next match is. So,
whoever thought I would have probably bet 100-1 when I first started the show that the Japanese rugby team would never be a topic of Blaze.
Yeah. I don't know if it's been a topic of any sports show, and that's why it's really cool
bringing something different. Listen, I know we got to take a break. We'll do a real quick version of S&B with C when we get back, and then of course we've got our picks as well. S&B with C. That is the Silver and Black with Caleb Herring. And we had a bye week this week. Last week, they came back and beat the Bears, who were supposed to have one of the best defenses in the NFL.
That's right, and completely shut out Khalil Mack and made him a non-factor. The Raiders are sitting at 3-2 in the bye week, but they got a tough schedule afterwards. They're going to be facing the Packers and then the Texans right behind that, who are both some powerful teams on either side of the division, AFC and NFC opponents. So, the Raiders are looking good, though. They're above 500 right now, enjoying a bye week. And like you said, that comeback against the Bears over in London was huge for them. And shutting out Khalil Mack, which nobody has done in the NFL. Nobody shut him out like that. And whatever the game plan was, it works. But like I said, the bye week, 2 weeks in a row, though, some tough opponents out of the bye. So hopefully some extra time to get ready for that.
I agree. Like the Wiz said, man, and also they got the best running back in the NFL as a rookie.
Yeah, rookie.
And Josh
rookie
Jacobs kicking butt.
Let's get it.
A late-round draft pick, man, mid-round draft pick, and comes through. Listen, it's time for the finale in the NFL picks. I do want to say I told you I had some information about the Patriots during break. And as I mentioned, they are the most efficient defense in the NFL, and their special teams combined with their defense have scored more touchdowns than the Dolphins and the Jets' offenses combined. How about that for a statistic?
That's just sad for the other.
Is that just ridiculous?
Well,
ridiculous.
I mean, in defense of the Jets, they were playing their third string quarterback for the last 4 weeks.
They played bad teams, a guy so bad that
they released him this week.
I'm not going to disagree. Okay, well, the finale, let's get through our picks real quick. We'll fly through these. We'll start off with the Wiz. We'll give him some airtime. Who are you taking?
Taking the Cowboys -7 over the Jets. Speaking of the Jets, Cowboys are the best team in the league at beating bad teams. So that's my safe bet.
And the Jets are definitely one of those, a bad team. All right, Spencer's going with the Cowboys. Caleb.
I'm going to the Battle of the Losers. Two what, how do, how would you say this?
They always say never winless, bet on bad teams.
Unlosing teams, unwinning teams, to the most losingest teams. Somebody's got to give, so I'm going with Washington. I'm thinking Washington's going to cover that.
I'm going to tell you that game's going to end in a tie.
Oh, 0-0. 0-0-1.
All right, Max, who you got?
I'm going with the Rams. To me, it's do or die time for them. They're struggling. They got San Francisco coming into town. George Kittle, questionable with a groin injury for San Francisco. I'm still not a big believer in those guys. To me, it's a must-win game for the Rams. Otherwise, they're in big trouble.
The Browns got to win at home today. They got to win at home. It's a pick 'em at home against Seattle, and Seattle's missing two offensive linemen. Both Dwayne Brown and DJ Fluker gone, and the Browns should get two defensive backs back. I like the Browns in this one. Hey, listen, we're out of time. Out of Line is here every Sunday morning, 8 to 9. I'm Brian Feldman. Thanks to co-host Caleb Herring, producer Chris Magnum Chapman, and the Wiz Spencer, our new intern. Appreciate y'all. We'll be back same time next week. Bye-bye.